Hey guys, this is Jason Pye. Today I'm chatting with Max Wood, a former United States attorney for the Middle District of Georgia and a Republican candidate for Attorney General. Thanks for joining me, Max.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're running for Attorney General.
Well, background, I grew up in Forest Park, graduated from public schools there in Forest Park, Georgia. Then went off to LaGrange College, which is in LaGrange, Georgia. We're a Methodist family, and so a lot of my friends from church were going down to LaGrange College, so we went down, including a brother, and we went down to LaGrange College together. And then I went to the University of Georgia Law School and finished there. Then I clerked for a Superior Court judge in Rome, Georgia, which is where I met my wife. And then while I was working in Rome, I joined the United States Air Force as a judge advocate and was a Air Force JAG for over 5 years. Then I moved to Macon to work as a state prosecutor for 5 years. I rose to be chief assistant district attorney in the Okmulgee Judicial Circuit. And then I went into private practice in Macon, Georgia for 4 years, and that's when I got involved in Republican Party politics there in Macon. And that led to my being very much involved in the George Bush campaign. And that led to me being appointed a United States Attorney for the Middle District of Georgia in 2001. While I was United States Attorney, I had the privilege to prosecute the largest child molestation case in the history of our state. I prosecuted a cult leader named Dwight York. He liked to refer to himself as Malachi York. And he was the leader of a cult called the New Wabians. And we prosecuted he and one co-defendant. That was a major trial that we're very, very proud of. And then also I got a chance to go to Iraq for a year and be the U.S. Department of Justice attaché at the embassy there in Baghdad. And that was really a life-changing experience. I have written a book about that experience that just was published recently. And remained U.S. Attorney for almost a full 8 years and stepped down in August and have been a candidate for Attorney General since then. I'm still a colonel in the Air National Guard. I'm still a colonel in the Air National Guard and continue to serve part-time in the military.
A lot of people don't really know what the Attorney General does. So if you wouldn't mind, just assume we're all ignorant of the office and just explain to us what the Attorney General of the state of Georgia does.
Well, from my perspective, he or she is the senior law enforcement official in the state. He or she has responsibilities for being the attorney for the state, providing legal advice and representing the state in civil litigation. It's very similar to being a United States attorney, which is one of the reasons I decided to run. The skill sets are identical. The responsibilities are virtually identical. But that's sort of the way it is now. I want to transform it in a lot of ways and retool it more to reflect my values, which if I'm elected means that there are values that are reflected by the population and the people of Georgia. So I'd like to make a lot of changes to the office. But right now it's basically an office that provides legal opinions to state agencies, that provides legal representation to state agencies. It does some criminal prosecution. I'd like to see it do more criminal prosecution. And it, of course, handles appellate issues. So that is the role of the Attorney General.
Now, what specific disagreements do you have with how the office has been run under Thurbert Baker?
Well, I don't know if disagreement is the right term. And I have not, spent the last 8 or 10 years of monitoring every move that Thurbert Baker makes, but I can tell you that I want to bring a lot of changes to the office. I want to change the way we handle appeals. I want to create an appellate division. I want to develop a great degree of appellate expertise. I want to develop it from the perspective of a strict constructionist constitutional view, from a conservative socialist view. So those are changes I would make. I don't know if I'm criticizing him for not doing that, but those are changes I would make. I want to get the office more engaged in criminal prosecution. I want to get the office to look at possibility of having satellite offices if that is the most cost effective. But these are just some of the many changes I would propose. I want to really revamp the office. It'll look a lot different 4 years after I get in there than it does on the day I walk in.
Now, you have primary opposition. What sets you apart from your primary opposition? Who is that's Sam Olens, Cobb County Commission Chairman.
I think there's a lot of things that set us apart. He's primarily a civil lawyer, plaintiff's lawyer. I'm a prosecutor primarily. I have a criminal law background. He has a civil law background, although I've done my share of criminal law work. And as United States Attorney, we had a significant criminal litigation load. I think it's a difference in passion. I think it's a passion for conservative issues. It's a passion for the issues that are the result of federal overreach in our society, which I hope we'll talk about real soon. It's a passion for wanting to make changes in that office, to want to propose bold ideas like a solicitor general for the state of Georgia, like an appellate division within the office so we can develop expertise in appellate issues instead of treating appeals as just another assignment for a line attorney. These are important constitutional issues that we're dealing with as we engage with the federal government, particularly with this administration in Washington as it continually tries to overreach into the purview of states, the things that should be reserved to the states under the Constitution. It's a difference between wanting to explore new ideas about special assistant attorney generals. Do we need more of them and less attorneys in Atlanta? Do we need less of them and satellite offices out across the state? I want to start with a blank sheet of paper, take a look at how we're spending money on SAGs, special assistant attorney generals, take a look at the possibility of having satellite offices. Is that cost effective? How do you factor in the legacy contributions of law firms that have been representing the state very well for a number of years? And I want to come in and take a whole new look at that. And that's the exciting thing about this race, and that for the first time in decades, the people are going to pick the next attorney general, not a governor appointing somebody midterm. So I think there's a lot of differences. It's a difference between a conservative a grassroots conservative Republican. I'm an evangelical Christian. I've got people, boots on the ground out there campaigning for me, versus, say, a more country club Republican, more of an establishment Republican. I don't think that the latter has the same passion as somebody that's out there with folks on the ground who are concerned about the Obamacare legislation, who are concerned about the wrongful expansion of the federal government into our lives every day, who are concerned about crime that's not being prosecuted by the DAs, that are not being prosecuted by the federal authorities, that I want to see our office get engaged in. So I think there's significant differences between the two candidates in the Republican primary.
Now, you mentioned federal overreaching, and as you know, and as I'm sure everyone listening knows, is on Sunday the United States House of Representatives passed a health care reform, and as of this afternoon, I think 13 or 14 states have pledged to file legal action against this legislation. Would you consider taking similar action if elected?
Absolutely. It'd be my first priority in light of the legislation that passed Sunday night. We had a press release out within hours of that vote. This has now become the most important issue in the Attorney General's race, in my opinion, because I think the people need to take a look at who's going to have the background and the passion to take on Obamacare. This was a historic negative turn for our country Sunday night. And as someone who has passion for preservation of the constitutional balance between state and federal governments, as somebody who is a social conservative, and as someone who's been litigating in federal court for 8 years of his career, I definitely think I'm the best person to lead that fight for Georgia. There are going to be a lot of candidates out there for attorney general positions, not only my opponent in the primary, but in other states, they're going to be talking about this issue. I think it's important. It makes our background more important than ever for people to take a look at. And it makes the proposal that I have been making from day one in this campaign about a solicitor general's office that more important. It shows that I've got an understanding of what the true issue is in this race. It's how we can impact on preserving limited constitutional government in our country. What role can we play as state's attorney general in preserving limited constitutional government? I think right now, at this moment in history, who we elect attorney general of the state of Georgia is more important than who we elect governor of the state of Georgia. got a lot of issues the governor's going to have to deal with, transportation, water. But the bigger issue for the whole country at large that we're all going to have to deal with, and we're going to have to deal with intensity, we're going to have to deal with passionately, is fighting back the federal government wants to take over health care. And right now, the state's attorney generals are the last firewall against this overreaching by the federal government. And we need to make sure we got the right people in those positions to fight that battle in court.
Well, I'm not trying to shoot you down, because I certainly would support a legal challenge against this legislation, because I think it's a massive overreaching by the federal government, and certainly something that's going to negatively affect every American, whether they want it to or not. Now, I'm the type of person that just desperately wants to be left alone. But the legal question is, you know, what grounds do we have against fighting back against the federal government? Because we have, the Commerce Clause of the Constitution has been basically given the government carte blanche to do whatever they want to do. I could cite some cases where that would Wickard v. Filburn, for example, where the Commerce Clause was used to basically say a farmer couldn't use wheat grown in his own property. It basically had to be destroyed, you know, and that was used, that the basis for that was the Commerce Clause. So what is the legal basis against fighting Obamacare?
It's the difference between regulating commerce, which is provided for in the Commerce Clause, and mandating commerce, which is not provided for in the Commerce Clause. And yes, you point out a good point. There's only so much we can do about a runaway judiciary, but we can fight that battle. And I think the judiciary has been a runaway judiciary in a lot of areas. Good gosh, look at the right to privacy arena, and that led to Roe v. Wade. That's classic judicial activism that has cost millions of unborn children their lives in this country. You've got the same dynamic with the Commerce Clause, but that doesn't mean we don't keep fighting the fight. And there's also, I think, an equal protection argument in that you're treating people in different states differently with the various compromises and backroom deals that benefit certain states or certain entities in states, and I think you'll see arguments articulated on that issue. And there's some other scholars that have possible First Amendment arguments out there about wrongful taking. I'm still studying that. Richard Epstein has an article floating around in circles about that that I'm going to take a look at. So there are at least two constitutional arguments about that, and maybe a third, and we'll fight that battle.
All right, well, staying on this topic of federal intrusion, Georgia's election laws are subject to approval by the U.S. Department of Justice. This is part of the Voting Rights Act passed in the 60s. Would you be willing to take on the Obama administration on these rulings?
Yes, I think Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act is just a terrible imposition on states. Section 2 needs to stay in place. I'm not an expert on that area, but Section 5 puts a special burden on these selected states and parts of a few more states. And, you know, if the Voting Rights Act is applied to every state, that would be a different argument. And I know those arguments have been made before and have been lost, but we would definitely be willing to take on the Justice Department in court. Georgia is well within its rights to expect voter identification, to cast a ballot, well within its rights to expect voters to provide documentation to prove that they are legal citizens of the United States when they vote. That's just so basic. It has to do with our basic sovereignty as a nation. I would be willing to fight that battle enthusiastically.
Enthusiastically. Well, ethics are an issue in Georgia right now, and I'd like to ask you, even though you're kind of, you'd have to prosecute any elected official, or at least weigh in with an opinion on any elected official who may be accused of wrongdoing. What would you like to see from ethics reform in Georgia, and what would you do to make sure elected officials are acting with integrity?
Well, I think when it comes to elected officials and who's contributing to them and who's taking them to dinner and that kind of thing, I think the most important thing is transparency. They'd be required to report all those engagements and the amounts of money involved, and that they do so virtually in standard. That's important. I do think limitations can be appropriate on how much money you can receive, how much can be spent on a gift. Those kind of things are all important. But what's most important is that there be an obligation for transparency and reporting of those type of activities on a larger scale. On a larger scale of have advocated from the very beginning, and I believe other candidates for this office have advocated for a statewide grand jury. It's time for a statewide grand jury. District attorneys sometimes don't want that. The sheriffs don't want that. But we need a statewide grand jury in Georgia. I spent 8 years, or just under 8 years, as a United States attorney, and I was regularly receiving phone calls from local sheriffs or local DA asking us to prosecute a certain defendant because they knew they couldn't get a conviction in their home county because the defendant was related to half the county. You know, this is a real problem in small counties, and it creates a cycle of frustration where you can't enforce the law because of clannishness among small counties where folks are related to each other, and people have been in the same county for generations, and they either don't want to convict somebody because of some sort of relationship like that, or there's intimidation by gangs of small communities. So you get a lot of jury nullifications and jury intimidations, and so there's a real problem in some of our smaller counties, particularly in Southwest Georgia, where we're almost virtually lawless in certain places. I've spoken to these police chiefs in these small towns, to these sheriffs in these small towns, and these DAs in these small towns over the course of almost 8 years, and it's a real problem. And so I would like to see a statewide grand jury that empowers the attorney general to prosecute cases, to have venue in another location, if we can find some sort of nexus with another location to do so, and explore the possibility of allowing nexus away from that home county. Because if we can't enforce the law in some of these areas that are economically depressed, you're not going to get new industry to move in. If I'm a businessman, I'm not going to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in a new plant or a new business in a community where my employees can't be safe, where I can't move my children. And then that affects the quality of public schools, and that affects the economic growth. And a lot of that has a connection to an inability to convict corrupt local politicians or corrupt gang members or corrupt criminal enterprises that are going on in some of these small towns. And we've got to have a statewide grand jury. Now, every case is going to be big enough for the federal government to engage on. And because of the dynamics of the jury pool in some of these small communities, the local DA is unable to prosecute successfully. I prosecuted a case in Hancock County, 15 years ago, and got a conviction, and it was historic. Because there was just such a history of the jury pool not wanting to convict for drug cases in that community. And so there's very little economic growth in Hancock County. And that's one where I have physically tried cases. I've been in that system and seen those jury pools and seen the frustration of the GBI and local law enforcement as they try to enforce the law in some of these smaller counties. So I'm 100% supportive of a statewide grand jury. I believe there's a bill in the state house right now on that. I don't know where it is in the process. But we need a statewide grand jury in the state of Georgia, and we need an attorney general to be more engaged in prosecution of these kind of cases, and we need an attorney general who is more engaged in information-based crimes, such as credit card fraud, internet-based crimes, identity theft. Those are crimes that I would like to see the state attorney general's office in Georgia prosecute also. As a former state prosecutor, as a former federal prosecutor, and a former military prosecutor, I feel like I am ideally suited to deal with the first statewide grand jury in Georgia history, which I hope will happen in the next few years.
You brought up during your answer jury nullification, and that's a concept that I personally support, but I mean, do you believe a jury has the right to invalidate what they believe is an unjust law?
No, not in a case. I've said that if someone has a morally conscious opposition to a law, that they should prayerfully consider whether or not it would be in the best to make their moral statement, like a civil rights law, not going to the back of the bus or sitting in a counter, those kind of things. But no, if you're, the only way you're going to get on, as a practical matter, the only way you're going to get on a jury with the idea of nullification is if you lie to the attorneys during the voir dire process. So I could never support anything like that.
Do you support the collection and storage of DNA information collected from arrestees in a database for use by law enforcement?
Well, the answer depends. If it's someone that's been convicted of a crime, yes. If it's just because someone's been arrested, I'd say no.
So you okay, unlike your one of your potential Democratic Party opponents who wants it upon arrest, you're saying right. Upon conviction.
Only upon conviction. No, I don't like the idea. I'm glad you asked that question. I remember when there was some press on that a few months ago, and I appreciate an opportunity to discuss that. No, that's very inappropriate just for an arrest. An arrest is arrest. It's not an indictment. It's not a conviction. And we have a concept of innocent until proven guilty. And we need to be focused on making sure we punish people that are convicted instead of broadening the imposition on people that are arrested but not convicted. There's enough work to be done with those that are actually convicted than to spend a lot of time and energy databasing people that just happen to be arrested.
Well, this is another issue that has...
And it's a morally... I mean, you know, I don't think it's morally right to do that. I don't think it's constitutionally right to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely on the Constitution, because you have the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment.
We're innocent until proven guilty,
right,
period.
Right.
Well,
this is another issue that's being brought up in the legislature, and it's... do you support alerting social networking sites of sex offender statuses for residents of Georgia, with the exception that they remove those whose name is included in the registry?
I don't know the specifics of the proposal. I don't know all the... I'm not a computer guy that understands how all those systems work. I'll just say that, I think Rob Talay has proposed something like that. And I would just say that I agree that someone who has been convicted, again, of a crime involving, child molestation or child solicitation, I see nothing wrong with restricting their access to the Internet.
Well, do you have any final thoughts for listeners?
Well, I believe I'm the best qualified candidate for this job, particularly those who are voting in the Republican primary. I feel like I'm the most conservative candidate in this race. I've got more prosecution than anybody in this race, and I'm a candidate that has proposed new ideas. I would describe them as politically bold ideas to retool that office, to remake that office, and make it more responsive to the needs of the state of Georgia, the people of the state of Georgia. So I think for this time in our history, I'm the right man for that job, and I'm thrilled at the possibility that may be something I can do the rest of my career, spend the rest of my career doing.
I have one more question to ask you. I forgot to ask it earlier, but you were talking about strict constructionism, and I wanted to ask you who your favorite or who your most, the Supreme Court justice that most represents what you believe in. Who would that be?
Scalia. Scalia is intellectually a hero of mine, but I also have a strong liking for Clarence Thomas because of his compelling personal story and his philosophy. And the fact that he serves his country well without being a showboat. He does his job. He speaks his mind when he needs to in his dissents or in his opinions. And I think his personal story is absolutely compelling.
Rarely speaks his mind. He hardly ever talks from the bench.
I know. But I like Scalia and Thomas.
Well, I wanted to give you an opportunity to give your websites and any social networking that you may have, if you want to give those out.
Sure. WoodForAttorneyGeneral.com. WoodForAttorneyGeneral.com. We've got a Max Wood for Attorney General Facebook page also, and we're trying to use the new media as much as we can in this campaign to reach as many people as we can.
Well, don't hang up yet because I want to talk to you, but I do want to say thank you for coming on with me, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.